95 Country, Andrew Michael here, and I am just so very, very, very excited to have John Schneider, a.k.a. Bo Duke, sitting across from me in my studio right now.
You big child. You big kid.
Well, you got to understand, I'm 42, right? So, you know, the Dukes, the night of Duke, the Dukes of Hazzard was on, you know, it was the one night I was allowed to stay up till I was till 9. But I had to have my PJs on. I had to have my bath, my teeth brushed, everything ready to go. So I could, because bedtime was 8:30. But
got an extra half hour.
If I did all that.
Friday night.
Yeah. The warden gave me an extra half hour. Mom and dad. And I could stay up till 9 and watch the Duke boys.
And then on Monday, you could talk about, or Saturday, you could talk about it with your friends. Because you weren't even in school yet, really.
I was like six, seven, eight-ish. Yeah. So, yeah, talk about it. Little League next day.
Little League next
day. Did you see the General Lee jump last night? Oh, my God.
Because if you didn't see
it,
that meant you were in trouble, right?
Oh, yeah.
You were not cool with your friends, but, oh, dude, what'd you do? You did something
wrong.
Well,
there weren't really even VCRs were around, but they were really expensive at the time. And
oh, yeah. No, if you didn't see it,
not everyone had them. If you missed it, you missed it.
I remember in 78, when we started filming Dukes, I bought a VCR. And there were only like four things you could. You could watch Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. You could watch Elvis Aloha from Hawaii. And then two other things I wasn't interested in. But the thing was like $1,500.
Yeah, in 1978 money. So that'd be like $5,000
and
today.
A blank VHS tape was like $40. Yeah, it was crazy. And but you could not watch. It was not a world where you could catch. You could not binge watch the Dukes of Hazzard in those days. Like you couldn't do the whole Breaking Bad thing,
right?
With Dukes of Hazzard or the Game of Thrones or Throne of Games or whatever in the world that thing is called.
Yeah,
you couldn't do that.
That's true. You couldn't do it.
Yeah, had to watch it when it was on, or you missed it.
And then the shows lived forever in syndication too.
Yeah, yeah, and it still just came out on Amazon Prime.
Oh, so
because it's
there
still
you go.
Not on TV Land because so, you know TV Land is. The keeper of all things politically correct.
Right.
Because Dukes is such a horrifically politically incorrect show.
Oh,
what in the world is going on out there?
I don't know. You know, I mean, a whole generation
jump
was...
Jump a car over those people.
Yeah. Exactly. So the Dukes of Hazzard had a good run. And I mean, iconic TV show. And of course, all the merchandising and everything else.
Right, right.
That came along with it. You know, I had the Dukes of Hazzard lunchbox, the PJs. I seem to remember there was Dukes of Hazzard. The Underoos.
Yeah,
I seem to remember there was Dukes of Hazzard cereal.
Really? I didn't see this. But yeah, there was a little HO cars and of course, the die-cast General Lees of any different size and the action
and the
figures and the slot cars and the piggy bank and we were the first Happy Meal.
Oh, really?
Yep. So
wow.
There's a lot of things Dukes of Hazzard out there, which is great. And of course, it was Waylon's... I think it was his first million selling single.
Well, he did the single and he did the voiceover stuff too, going in and out
of
the commercials.
Well, I don't know how the boys are going to get out of that one.
I bet they'll
go to the refrigerator now, right? Yeah, so it was great having Waylon. He did a couple of episodes too, so it was great.
That's right,
fun.
He did do a couple of cameos.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
After your you know hugely successful iconic TV show that is it's awesome that it's on Amazon Prime too. We'll go ahead and give you another plug for that.
There you go.
Because I have Amazon Prime.
And
so
if you don't know,
I know what I'm doing
things,
this weekend.
Just go to my Facebook page, like my Facebook page,
yes.
And I'll let you know about all this stuff. John Schneider Studios on Facebook. Studios is the important. There's a bunch of John Schneiders out there, but John Schneider Studios is me.
Okay.
I am. John Schneider Studios.
Down in Holden.
And you'll know because there's a picture of me there.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That helps.
And it says John Schneider Studios.
So after your run on TV, you kind of shifted gears and came over to music.
To the dark side.
Was that something you had wanted to do kind of all along? Or did you sort of...
Well, I did music during Dukes. When I was on CBS for Scotty Brothers.
Okay.
And
the
biggest charting song I had with that bunch was It's Now or Never, which was a Elvis Presley cover of a Mario Lanza cover.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Oh, so let me, all right. It's now or never. Not a great song for for morning time. But
yeah, you need to warm up.
And that
one.
Song is still the top charting Elvis cover of all time. I think it got to number 3 in R&R and in Billboard. So that was pretty cool.
Well, and you had a couple number ones too.
Well, then when I shifted over to country music, had 4 number one songs,
right.
And that started right after Duke. So almost immediately after the last show of Duke's aired,
which was literally the saddest day of my life.
I know, and I don't think any of us really believed that it was that it was true, that we were done, because how could CBS be so foolish?
Yeah.
Because we were still in the top 20.
Right.
And but they'd done it before. They CBS had a reputation of one day they would wake up and say, okay, no more rural anything.
Yeah.
And because I believe one morning Bill Paley canceled Petticoat Junction and the Beverly Hillbillies and Green Acres.
The big purge in the,
like
in the 70s.
All at once,
yeah.
Got rid of everything that had a dirt road in it.
Right.
And then it happened again when they canceled Dukes, because there really was no reason to cancel it. It was doing great.
Yeah,
it was top 20
was.
In a world where there were still only 64 shows, I think. It was three stations.
Yeah, ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yeah, and sometimes Y.
Maybe you had a weird indie station in your town.
Well, you had PBS.
Right,
so you had PBS, which
station.
Is always great.
Right.
But and then that UHF thing, I'm not even sure what that was.
you had to get on your
second
roof
dial
and turn
you
the
never
antenna
used.
Just right, yeah.
Yeah, and you had to put the aluminum foil on there.
They
canceled Dukes, and then this song came out. Hush, don't talk now.
Oh, so good.
It won't change anything anyhow. Right? Bob McDill, Dickie Lee wrote that song, and that was a number one song for me, called I've Been Around Enough to Know.
It's a great song. Still holds up, too.
Does. They're such wonderful writers. And then the follow-up to that was, I've been to California. There's that word, California. Where the ladies look so fine. They can take a long-haired country boy and softly bend his mind. Country Girls, which also went number one. Because I have people sometimes, so funny. Even when Dukes was on and I was doing the Mike Douglas show and the Dinah Shore show and the Academy Awards, and I sang everywhere.
Yeah,
I was
you
like
really
the
did.
Guy who sang on all these shows.
You were kind of the Ryan Seacrest of its time there from the mid-80s. There wasn't an award show that you weren't on.
That's right. I was there, not winning anything, not even
right.
being, but I was singing. There's that guy from the show who sings. But everybody would say, I didn't know you sang. It was so strange. Every time I opened my mouth, oh, I didn't know you sang. So I just had the number one song with I've Been Around Enough to Know, and then Country Girls came out and went number one, and people who listened to Country Girls said, I didn't know you sang.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what about I've Been Around Enough to Know? Was that you? I said, yeah. Well, I didn't know you sang then either. So it's been strange, and now it's so many decades later now.
Right.
People say, oh, I've got your record. I said, well, which one? Ha ha. I said, no, really, which one? Which one do you have? Which, you know, that song you had. I said, look, I'm not David Soul. This is not Sometimes When We Touch.
Right.
Which song are you talking about? Because there were 4 number one songs. Aha! I said, no, truly, there were 4 number one songs.
Yeah, a handful of top tens.
I think there were 10 top tens. And
so, I mean, that alone.
But they know the songs. Even Alicia, she heard... you're the first thing that I'll need tomorrow, the last thing I needed tonight, right? You're the last thing I needed. It's a morning. You, you always are. I can't wait for the day to end. Another number one song. And Alicia.
That was a big wedding song back in the day, too.
Yeah, because they had big weddings back then.
They did.
Yeah, it was a great song. You're the last thing I needed tonight. Not to be confused with Willie Nelson's The Last Thing I Needed, First Thing This Morning.
Right.
You know, we get a little complicated linguistically here. But Alicia knew that song really well and didn't know I sang it. Oh, I didn't know that was you. And that happens a lot. Like Memory
if,
Like You, people go, I love that song. When did you cover that song? I said, no, I didn't. That's me. Well, I didn't know you sang. I said, remember.
I wonder if Tom gets the same treatment.
About people not knowing
that was the song
well, it
he
could
sang.
Be. I'm sure it does. You know, and That could be what Love Is a Rock.
That was a good song.
Right? And yeah.
I bet he probably gets the same
thing. He wrote a couple. I think he wrote an Earl Thomas Conley. Earl Thomas Conley song. But yeah, I'm sure that he does. But arguably, he did have the one song.
So yeah, he only takes one.
He had the one. He had one song. No, I'm saying he did have one song.
Right.
He didn't have four number one songs. I don't even think the one song he had got in the top 10. I love him to death, but come on. Sometimes when we touch, right? Or you take my breath away. God bless you, Rex Smith. But, you know, it was a career. It was a substantial career.
Well, for sure.
And now that I'm doing it again, people who were really into country music back then, and we're talking about back before the barcode and before country music became what it is today, the diehard fans all knew that because those were great songs. I didn't write any of the songs. I can really brag about these songs because Troy Seals wrote Country Girls and
John
Gerard.
Yeah, you had some really good songwriters.
Wonderful songwriters. And I still do. The new record is all full of amazing songs because the people that wrote these songs have been doing it for years. Bill Anderson wrote one of the songs. Bobby Tomerlin wrote a couple of the songs. Chuck Cannon, who wrote How Do You Like Me Now?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking some of the biggest songwriters out there.
Yeah, and they just know how to put words together. And
it's always fascinating to watch a songwriter like that work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they know what to rhyme and how to rhyme something where. And they'll say, oh, I need a... I mean, these are really talented people who understand. I can't even say it.
Yeah.
Iambic pentameter.
There you go.
Right? They understand, especially Bill Anderson, understands how to rhyme things and when.
Right.
And how to tell a story in the least amount of words.
In 3 minutes.
In 3 minutes, that's right. Three chords of truth and you, right?
Yeah, and two verses, three choruses, a bridge.
Mm-hmm. And they come up with things like... There's a ring on her forehead on the picture where the bottle sat last night. It might look like a halo, but I know it's a trick of the light. And that smile on her face has a way to fool any old fool. She came straight from heaven, but remember the devil did too.
This is brilliant.
Right?
This is brilliant.
When you fall for an angel like her, you're walking on clouds, right? When you're in love, you're so up, you forget to look down. The higher and higher she took me, the further I fell. And it's angels like her that send guys like me straight to hell.
Such a good
song.
They're
just, great.
Just poetry.
Great lyrics. There's a ring on her forehead on the picture where the bottle sat last night. My God. Yeah, they're just so great.
So then in the early 90s, you formed the Children's with
1982, we formed Children's Miracle Network.
I'm a whole decade off. Okay.
Yep. 1980, because we're 35 years old now. Started Children's Miracle Network.
With the Osmonds, right?
Well, Marie was part of it. Once we got going, we had Marie Osmond, myself, Mick Shannon, Joe Lake, and a guy named Mike Gersey that nobody talks about, who was actually the person to encourage you when you're starting something new. You need the person to herd cats.
Right.
And Mike was the cat herder. And we started that in 1982.
So what inspired that whole thing to get founded? Because, I mean, it's one of the most respected children's charities.
It is the largest children's charity in the world.
On earth nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what, was there like an epiphany moment or was it?
No, there was, I had worked with another charitable organization and I go out to the children's hospitals. I'm a guy that goes out like here. I come to the radio station. I've always been that guy.
Right.
So being that guy and working for another organization, I saw some things that I thought were opportunities, shall we say, for them to do better.
Okay.
One was the money needed to stay local because people here don't want to give money to kids there.
Yeah.
They just don't.
It's
true. They kind of do, but no. Also, the 100% of the money needed to stay
locally
and go to the kids. 100% of it, not 60, not 80, not 10, but all of it. And the money needed to be raised for children regardless of what they had, because most charitable organizations are for a very specific illness.
Okay.
Spina bifida, muscular dystrophy, sickle cell, pediatric AIDS,
cancer.
Anything. Yeah.
Because we're a St. Jude radio station.
St. Jude. And the only reason I didn't say
it's okay.
Everybody was because St. Jude's also, they raise money for the whole child. That's what we used to say.
Correct.
The whole child. Most everybody else raises money for something very specific. And that eliminates, if you're not touched by that, if your child doesn't have it or your nephew doesn't have it, you don't know someone who has spina bifida. It's not that you don't care. It's just that you're not as affected by it and
right.
You're not as likely to give.
Okay.
So those three things were the three founding principles of Children's Miracle Network, because the other organization wasn't interested in any of them. Said none of them could work. You know, they'd have to change everything that they currently did. And nobody's really going to do that. So it was a matter of taking those three ideas and being quiet and saying, okay, well, I think they're good ideas, and doing nothing or starting something new. And that's when we started Children's Miracle Network, which is now Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. And we are just so short of, I just might as well say $6 billion. We're just a hair under $6 billion that we've raised for Children's Hospitals. Yeah, it's really amazing. And it continues to grow. We have wonderful corporate sponsors. We have wonderful people who, radio stations who do radiothons. And it's really fantastic. I think it was $360 million this year.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That's a big chunk of money.
Yep, and all that goes to the hospitals, all of it. So it's great. And then they decide how to spend it, which
right.
is another important thing.
To not micromanage.
Well, yeah, because then you pretend you know.
Yeah.
And part of the big part of the how Children's Miracle Network works so well is our relationships with the hospitals. We don't have some squeaky wheel that goes in and says to a pediatric cardiologist, you know, by the way, here's how you need to. No, we don't have that person. We say, here's a check. Your people in your community, your television, your radio, your Walmart, your Dairy Queen, your, all these people raise this money so that you could have it and spend it any way you want, because you deal with the children every day, and you're the only ones who know. So that relationship is great.
And it was such a groundbreaking kind of concept
at the
time.
Yeah, and now, still not a lot of people do it, because people want to hold on to the power of the
right.
They want to have a group, they want to have a governing body who decides where the money is spent.
They want to have a board,
they want to have all that right. kind of stuff, and they want to get paid.
Yeah.
And we don't believe in any of that. We do not believe in getting paid. No, it doesn't. We believe in making sure that the kids come first, second, and third. It's all about the kids. So it's been great. And it's, like I said, been 35 years now.